Welcome to the Everyday Innovator podcast for product managers, leaders, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping you become a product master. Listen and get ready for higher performance, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, and this is where product leaders and managers become product masters, gaining practical knowledge, influence, and confidence so you'll create products that customers love. Now, part of the path to becoming a product master is developing as a leader. Leaders of product management need a few things like agility, influence, trust, empathy, and a motivating vision. And those are exactly the topics that our guest, Roman Pichler, explores with us in this episode. Roman is a product management expert specializing in digital products. He is the author of several books, including his latest titled, How to Lead in Product Management. His popular blog is also available as a podcast, and both can be found simply by searching for his name, Roman Pichler. And as always, remember, we take notes for you. The notes are a great way to review key points and also share those points with colleagues. You'll find those at theeverydayinnovator.com/289. We're also trying something new recently, and that's to create an action guide, a one-page PDF to help you take action quickly on the tips, on the insights, the strategies that you hear in this episode. You'll also find that action guide for free at theeverydayinnovator.com/289. Now, let's talk with Roman.
Roman, thank you so much for being part of the Everyday Innovator podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Chad. It's nice to be here.
Glad you are, and I'm glad we can talk about your work. I first came across you a few years ago in association with Agile Product Management, probably because you had a book on that topic that came out about a decade ago, one of the very first books, you know, about this notion of Agile Product Management. So I'd like to just start there with a definition. How do you describe Agile Product Management?
Yeah, how do I describe Agile Product Management? So I'd say it's product management infused or enriched by Agile practices and Agile principles. So ideas like having an empowered and respected product person who interacts with users, customers, stakeholders, and the development team, taking advantage of iterative incremental development process, the ability to test ideas quickly and frequently, and to realize value as early as possible. Things like treating the development team as an equal partner and encouraging people to co-own certainly the product details and the solution, and helping with discovering product functionality and describing the product details. And generally embracing a collaborative mindset, trying to get people's buy-in and leveraging people's creativity and knowledge. So those are, for me, important elements of Agile product management. But, you know, maybe just to sort of contextualize, certainly my book on Agile product management, when I first started working with product managers, that was in 2001 in the context of a healthcare company, and we were building a brand new healthcare product. I was shocked by the level of, in a way, bureaucracy, I'd say, that I encountered. So the processes were very old school, very waterfall, very sequential. There was not much going on in terms of collaboration, particularly not with the development team. It was very much like we write all the requirements up front and then we throw them over the fence. And so, you know, at that stage, I was really concerned and I was thinking, wow, you know, how do those new, back then, pretty new, brand new agile practices, you know, how do they, you know, how will they ever work with the type of product management that I encountered? So in a way, the book was my attempt to offer an answer. How can product people benefit from agile practices, but also to a certain extent, how will product people have to change, you know, in order to be successful in this brave new agile world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good background. The context for this was software development. I'm curious, just over the years, have you found, I don't know if you're getting involved in products that also have a hardware piece to it, or if you see this getting used more in that hardware sense?
Yes. Yeah, I've been involved in products where the hardware was developed in parallel to the software. Mm-hmm. And I have seen companies apply agile principles and practices to hardware development. And certainly the idea of very, very short cycles and fast iterations is harder to realize when hardware is developed. I'm not a hardware specialist, but I mean, certainly the agile principles for me are largely universally applicable, I'd say. And then the practices, I think, need to be adapted depending on the type of product that is being developed.
I think so too. It struck me that Robert Cooper, who's the one that did the original research that led to StageGate and is known kind of, you know, the father of StageGate, when he wrote his update to his book in 2018, which is what, Winning at New Product, maybe? Might have that title wrong, but I think that's it. He in there shared that he sees Scrum used in every hardware company that he has encountered, you know, recently. Mm-hmm. So embracing agile type practices, which I think is more than anything to me, I think it's just that notion of we should be experimenting and learning along the way and not trying to figure it all out upfront.
That's right. Yes. You're absolutely right. And I think that's sort of one of the key agile principles, really, maximizing value creation by figuring stuff out early and not shying away from, you know, certainly early failure.
Good. And now it's 2020. As we're talking, there's a lot of weirdness going on in the world that we're all aware of. It's end of April. I think listeners are probably hearing this end of June, early July, that kind of time frame to just provide context for the everyday innovators. But you have a book that you put together and published early this year titled How to Lead in Product Management, Practices to Align Stakeholders, Guide Development Teams, and Create Value Together. Great subtitle there. Talk about your experiences that led to seeing this book create. Right? How did you go from agile product management to saying we need to really help product leaders?
Yeah, nice question. So I think the product management community has changed a lot over the last 15 years or so. And I think for the better, I think we've benefited a lot from things like, you know, Scrum and agile, but equally lean startup and customer development, business modeling, and other new ways of working and other schools of thinking and the related tools and templates. You know, think about things like the business model canvas or the lean canvas, the value proposition canvas, the product vision board. I mean, there's so many great roadmap templates out there now. Think about Slack, think about Trello and Jira, and all the tools that we take for granted today. But I think what's received less attention is the soft side of product management, are the soft skills, the people skills, the leadership skills, particularly for practicing product people, you know, sort of practicing product managers, product owners, people who have to make tough decisions about products and interact with development teams and stakeholders. And so my experience suggests that, you know, while the hard skills are important, you know, things like being able to do some market research and maybe conducting some user interviews or creating a product strategy and validating it, doing some road mapping, prioritizing the backlog and all those good things, they're not enough. So I think if we focus overly on the hard skills and neglect the people skills, the soft skills, the leadership skills, I think it's hard to succeed as the person in charge of the product. And so my book really wants to offer practical help for product people, but at the same time, my intention was also to generally draw more attention to what I consider to be an important part of product management. I was messaging with a product manager earlier today, and he said to me, "Oh yeah, you're really right. Product management really is 80% people, 20% technology, and you can easily learn the technology." I thought that was a really neat way of summarizing it. And so, yeah, I very much share that view. And so that's where my book has come from.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I often think of the soft skills as nothing soft about them, right? These are the hard ones that are to learn and put into practice. And they're the ones that make the difference. They're the ones that help people accelerate their careers and their effectiveness, not just on getting the work done, the tasks done, but the work with others. Right? So really
yes.
Important.
Yes. Yeah, I really agree.
Roman is sharing great leadership insights with us, and we'll get back to hearing more in just a minute. Product management leaders, they're making investments in their product managers, helping them be more knowledgeable, productive, and higher performing. Some of these leaders are choosing to work with me to get that higher performance using my RPM experience. That's the Rapid Product Mastery experience. Several companies are seeing results. Not only are their product managers getting on the same page, learning a holistic framework for improved product management, they're also collaborating with each other like never before. The RPM experience takes place over web conferencing, making it ideal for geographically dispersed teams. Also, it's fun and engaging. Participants often share that they have never been part of such a different and enriching experience. I have a couple spots left for groups starting in August. Get the details and schedule time with me to discuss your needs at theeverydayinnovator.com/RPM. Now let's hear more from Roman.
So let's talk about some of the issues that do come up, both in our roles sometimes as product managers, we face these, certainly as product leaders, to varying degrees. And the first one I wanted to kick off with you, there's been much discussed about this, but still there's product managers that like to refer to themselves as the mini CEO. Mm-hmm. And if you've been in the role for any length of time, you quickly recognize that's so far from reality. You may have responsibility for a product as a CEO. You have no authority to actually, you know, make things happen, which is very different from a CEO. So help us with this issue of dealing with the no authority and yet having that responsibility.
Yeah. I think, you know, you're touching on a very important point here. As you said, as product people, we don't have any positional authority or transactional power, right? We can't make people do things. We can't tell the stakeholders and the development team members what to do. We can't assign tasks. And typically, we can't offer any incentives like a bonus or a salary rise. But we rely on people's work. We rely on people's contribution in order to succeed in our job and make our product successful. So the answer for me then, given that's the case, is, you know, to encourage stakeholders and development team members to move in the same direction, is to try and influence them and try and get people to listen to us and get people to follow our advice, our guidance. And that's only possible if people trust us, if people believe that we have good that we act in their interest and that we care about them and that people have faith in us. So for me, trust is the key element here, the key enabler to be able to align people, guide people, lead people successfully.
So let's dive into trust a bit more. We have to have influence. I personally think this is a good position for leaders, regardless of their level of authority, right? Mm. To lean on influence as opposed to positional authority you may have, just because the title or role might allow you to provide incentives to people and also punishments, including, you know, maybe firing them. I think organizations work much better when you take a more transformational approach and you're trying to influence others and trying to treat them like volunteers. Which means as product managers, that's perfect training ground to become an effective leader, right? Because that's truly our situation. When it comes to building trust, what have you seen are ways to help facilitate that?
Mm. Yeah, so trust is truly crucial. And in order to build it, I think the first thing that I'd like to suggest is to try and reach out to people with empathy in it and try and empathize. And for me, that means developing a kind, warm-hearted attitude towards the people and taking a genuine but respectful interest in the person and being concerned for her or his well-being. Now, that's easy when we agree with what the person has to say and when we find the person likable. It's much harder when we disagree, maybe strongly disagree, or find the person difficult or not very likable. But I think empathy is not about approval. It's not about agreement. It's just about accepting, about acknowledging that this is what's happening. And by empathizing with somebody, not only do we then stand a better chance of discovering what's really going on for her or him. So, you know, what are the underlying needs and interests and goals? What's the underlying motivation? But also it builds trust. People feel valued and people feel appreciated. People mm-hmm. feel accepted. And I think that is crucial. And again, it's a prerequisite for encouraging people to change for the better and for getting people, earning people's trust. And related to empathy is listening attentively and listening with an open mind. I mean, sometimes it's referred to as active listening or deep listening. So trying not to be overly critical and judgmental when somebody speaks to us, but really making an effort to be there and lead with presence, be present for the person. And again, that builds trust through people feeling heard, people feeling understood, feeling valued, speaking and acting with integrity. So saying what we believe is true and acting accordingly, sometimes easier said than done. I remember I once had a boss and we were working on a new product development effort in the telco space and it wasn't going too well. And so he could be a very nice and kind person, but he could get also pretty grumpy. And so as things weren't going too well, he was getting more and more irritated and more grumpy. And so I certainly started to sugarcoat my messages and started to tell white lies about the progress. And that data doesn't look that good. But, you know, that really, it's not going to be that bad and we'll be able to recover. And so in hindsight, that wasn't appropriate behavior. and it indirectly supported his way of responding to bad news, which was really kind of sort of trying to penalize people rather than appreciating that people actually, you know, report an issue, report a problem. So, you know, there's something we can do about it. Mm-hmm. And then things like, you know, getting to know people, hanging out, our backgrounds, family situation, they do influence us. And when we get to know people better, it's easier to understand why they react in certain ways and why they say certain things. And, you know, it can be as simple as going and having coffee together, or it could be something, I think that Patrick Lencioni suggested in his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, sharing failure stories. Sharing failure stories shows vulnerability, builds trust. And that can be pretty powerful if it's done in the right way. And finally, things like strengthening our product management expertise. It's hard for others to expect to trust us and follow us if there are gaps and, you know, significant weaknesses in our product management, in our product management knowledge and skill set. So I think that's also something that can be worth looking at.
Very good. So let me practice empathy and active listening there. So what I heard you say was that empathy is really important. It's not about agreement, but it's about just understanding, right? Hearing what they say. You talk about listening carefully, that we're really engaged and we're listening to them. And a lot of time we listen with the intent of speaking next. So we're actually thinking about what we're going to say instead, listening to what they really said. Talking about integrity and giving maybe the hard news at times, but, you know, saying what is true and honest about things, getting to know people. I love that. Just the ability to develop rapport with people helps you in the future, right? People that you have rapport with are more likely going to give you attention when you need help and attention in the future. And then having the skills and capabilities, right? Getting better at our craft as time goes on.
Yes. Yeah. Nice summary. Thank you. Nicely paraphrased.
Well, thank you for laying all those out. There's two I would add that I'm sure you have encountered as well. One, for building trust, I always find it's very important to follow through on what you say, right? Mm. Actually deliver on your commitments. Mm. And if you find you can't deliver on a commitment, be forward about that before the commitment has passed, right? And so what's going on. And the other one is borrowing trust from others. There's times where I've built trust with someone, and they were able to, in a very quick sense, right, impart that trust to someone else that I needed to trust me, and, you know, leaning on that existing network to build trust with others. Then,
wonderful. Yeah, cool.
Okay, thank you for sharing all those tips on trust. Another issue that comes up is aspects of product vision, and it's you talked about having the influence that we need, and part of this is getting everyone kind of moving in the same direction together, right? Working on the project in a way that's well aligned, and that comes for me at least comes through product vision, that we have this common goal in place. Tell us about creating that, about how that's useful, how we can leverage that better. Mm.
So product vision for me really describes the positive change a product should bring about, the ultimate reason for creating a product. So an example I like to use for a product that helps people become more aware of maybe how much they eat and what they eat and when they eat will be healthy eating. Yeah, so, you know, that's the positive change we'd like to bring about. I mean, so, you know, sometimes a good way, I feel, to kind of come up with an effective vision is to think of it as a generic, generalized value proposition. But yeah, the ultimate reason for creating the product, the positive change it should bring about. So as for me, the vision really is maybe the most important goal for in a product context. It builds the foundation. I feel it's particularly important with this goal, with this inspirational, motivational goal, that the stakeholders and development team members buy into it. So if you don't have the support from those individuals for the vision, then coming up with a shared strategy and roadmap and product backlog will be even harder, right? Because the strategy in my mind describes the way that we're choosing in order to make progress towards that vision and bring about that positive change. So a great way or a nice way to get people's buy-in and at the same time leverage their collective wisdom and ensure that there is a shared understanding is to have a workshop, a collaborative workshop, and, you know, kick off a new product development effort with a visioning and strategizing workshop where you create the initial vision, you know, and an initial product strategy that then forms the basis for further product discovery and strategy validation work. And when you go through, say, a lifecycle extension and make a major change, a major update to an existing product, again, it's worthwhile revisiting the vision and saying, you know, is that still what we're working towards? Is that still like a valid overarching goal, like a North Star, something that generates some pull? Or do we want to have to make any adaptations, any adjustments? So it's really about collaboration. It's really about joint, you could say, co-creation, certainly when it's a new vision. And it's about collaborative decision making around that goal. And collaboration does have its challenges, but I think it's worthwhile giving it a good shot. As I said, it's so great when it, you know, it's so great to get people's buy-in and really make sure that people move towards that vision, and it's not just lip service and people's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I've heard it. Yeah. So what? But that it becomes the big shared goal everybody's moving towards.
That's a really important point. That buy-in changes sharing a vision with someone where, you know, it's up to them how they're going to respond to that vision you share with them, instead of them being part of actually developing that vision. And having that collaborative workshop where you get people to contribute to the idea is so important for that buy-in. It just changes the dynamics quickly on a project. Who would you have involved in that, right? So we're trying to influence the stakeholders, those associated with this product in some sense that have an interest in it. Who would you have involved in that collaborative workshop?
Yeah, so for me, as you said, it'd be the stakeholders, the key stakeholders. So for a commercial product, that'd be typically somebody from marketing, sales, supports, maybe finance, maybe operations, and development team representatives. So I think it's really important to get a good representation and bring all the key people on board. So anybody you need in order to design and build and then also market, sell, and provide the product. And that gives people an opportunity to influence the product at an early stage, be it a brand new product or a major product update. But it then also creates a connection between those individuals and with the product. Uh-huh. And I think for me, finding the right group of people and building a stakeholder community and keeping then that group together and helping that group work together effectively is a key success factor. And I think it's something that's sometimes overlooked by product people or underestimated. I mean, you know, particularly in an agile context, there's a lot of focus on working with the development team, which is great. And I think there are lots of benefits in building a good relationship mm-hmm. with the development team members, but the key stakeholders are equally important. And so I think, you know, product people need to build those two types of connections to the stakeholders and to the development team members. And again, it's kind of nice to find the right people and then have a stable group that works with you on a continued basis, you know, helps you with product discovery, helps you with strategy validation, helps you with product road mapping, but then also at least, you know, once a month or so as a rule of thumb shows up at say sprint review meetings and looks at how the product is evolving and is able to offer feedback and can use that in order to align their own and manage their own activities, say marketing and sales related activities.
Yeah, that's really good. Is this the product team or is this different than the product team?
So personally, I like the term product team to refer to the stakeholders and the development team representatives plus the product person or the group of product people who manage a product. But then, you know, product team is quite an ambiguous term, it seems. You know, some people use product team to refer to a team of product people. So, you know, I think, yeah. I mean, my suggestion is people should use whatever term they feel most comfortable with. If product team works, that's great. I mean, I wrote about stakeholder community in my book because I felt that was a more neutral phrase. But yeah, I mean, I tend to talk about product team when I talk to product people and when I talk to clients.
Okay. Is this collaborative workshop to kick off and develop this vision, is this 6 to 10 people? Is it bigger than that, smaller than that?
I think it depends on the type of product and the structure of the organization. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you have, you know, the at least one product person, right, the person in charge of the product, and then say for commercial product, marketing, sales, support, maybe finance, and then you have 2-3 development team members. So then we're talking about 8 people, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel for those kind of workshops, it's kind of nice to keep the number to, you know, around 10 people or so. Otherwise, it's kind of hard to get full participation. And, you know, some people may get hesitant to contribute and you may get a few individuals dominating simply because of the nature of the group and the size of the group. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'd say try and sort of limit the size to 10 if you can.
Yeah, I think this is a really important tip that you just shared about, you know, trying to have this collaborative session. Sometimes as product managers, we might go work individually with someone in marketing, individually with operations, individually with sales, and getting them together lot more happens at one time because just the synergies of that. The other thing, though, organizations typically, as much as we would like to design them to work as a system, more times than not, they actually work as independent functions, right? Mm-hmm. And some, we might say, silos. And it's not like marketing is fighting against, you know, engineering or development. They just don't tend to work together a lot. And they have their own interests. And getting everyone together, those key stakeholders in the same room, that helps going back to building influence. That helps and trust to build rapport and get people sharing information in ways they probably don't regularly, except from outside product.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. My microphone, sorry, apologies, keeps changing.
It has a mind of its own.
Normally, this is rock solid, but today, I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah, it's been one of those days, listeners. We started late because I had all kinds of problems with the recording today, but this is going well now. So,
cool. Technology, huh?
Exactly.
In the 21st century. So getting those
groups together.
Yes, and I think it's very beneficial for the individual stakeholders to hear their respective ideas, concerns, and listen to each other's needs. And so again, that builds understanding, it builds relationships, and it frees the product person from becoming sort of a little bit like a broker mediator who goes, you know, from one stakeholder to the next and tries to persuade and sell and convince. However, the challenge can be when you have people who are not used to collaborative workshops and teamwork, or can be very dominant or very senior, and expect that others follow their leads, that they want to dominate and they want to take over. And so I found it can be very valuable. It is very valuable to, first of all, prepare the workshop. And secondly, try and find a skilled facilitator that might be an experienced Scrum Master, Agile coach, who guides people through the workshop and establishes maybe some ground rules or reminds people of ground rules, if that's helpful, but also encourages full participation and encourages people to speak up and thanks people who've already contributed quite a bit for their effort, but also then reminds them to give others the chance to be heard. So that the person in charge of the product doesn't have to contribute actively, because I feel that's what the individual should do, you know, and at the same time having to facilitate. I think that dual role can be a lot, again, particularly when people aren't used to collaborative decision making and collaborative workshops. So yeah, get a skilled facilitator to support you.
Yeah, and it goes back to the importance of soft skills, right? That's a soft skill to be able to guide a group in that manner. Another aspect that you talked about, so everyday innovators listening, when you have created that inspirational vision and maybe your manager has said, the vision is to make money, right? It's like just pouring cold water on it. Because you described this as it needs to be inspirational vision, right? And I think that's very, very important. Not always managers see things the same way. That should not discourage us, right? We still need to get this done.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, any product needs to make money in one way or the other. I mean, either directly generating revenue, indirectly generating revenue, or reducing cost, or increasing productivity, or increasing brand value. I mean, at the end of the day, in order to be sustainable, monetization has to happen in some form. But I think at least as important, if not more important, the product exists to not only create value for a business, but also for, you know, a group of people, the users and customers. And so I think it's nice to have a vision that isn't purely focused around kind of business goals, but really talks about, it's more altruistic and talks about the positive change that you want to bring about for the beneficiaries of your product.
Yeah, exactly. I liked how you framed that earlier, the positive change, right? It's how we're delighting, how we're solving the customer's problem, how we're creating something that they will love. And in turn, that should generate value for us as well.
That's right.
Okay. There's many other topics that you go through in your book and topics you've encountered, right, in the last now, I guess, 18, 19 years of doing product work. What is another topic you would want to leave us with that's high on your list when it comes to being an effective product leader?
So in terms of fundamental capabilities or qualities that we can kind of train ourselves in, I think empathy, which we've already covered, the ability to understand people and be accepting, even if we disagree or even if we dislike. So I think, again, that's really something we can strengthen, we can train ourselves in. And then I find, and you know, that's maybe a personal perspective, but I find mindfulness very helpful. So bringing some awareness to what is going on right now, what is going on right now for me, and the ability, or increasing my ability to stay present, be in the present moment, and, you know, become aware of my emotions, my thoughts, the mood I'm in, my biases, my defaults, my preferences, my triggers, my needs. And what I find is that this gives me more choices, and it makes me less likely to say something or do something that I later regret, and then I'll have to apologize. You know, I mean, none of us is perfect, and I think as human beings, we'll always make mistakes. It's, you know, I think it comes with being a complex social entity as we are. But I think by just bringing a little bit more awareness to what's happening right now, we give ourselves a little bit of more choice, and we can be less reactive and more responsive. Mm-hmm. So for me, those are sort of fundamental enabling qualities that I found really helpful.
Yeah, those are very good qualities. They align well with this notion of emotional intelligence. Mm. And there's good research on emotional intelligence. It's all those things you talked about, that how you characterize mindfulness, how we see ourselves, manage ourselves, how we see others, how they see us, how we manage that relationship. And there's good research that suggests leaders that are good at practicing those skills, emotional intelligence, are twice as effective as leaders who don't. So that's a great one to rise to the top of your list. I'm so glad you shared that with us.
Yeah, thanks.
As listeners know, I love innovation quotes. What did you bring for us, and tell us why you chose that one?
Yeah, so the quote that I chose is from Carol Dweck, and it's from her book, Growth Mindsets. And it says, a person's true potential is unknown and unknowable. And it's impossible to foresee what can be accomplished with years of passion, toil, and training. Mm. Now, the reason that I like this quote a lot is that I find we tend to see ourselves as good or bad at something, and sometimes have sort of quite a fixed view of who we are and what we can do. So a simple example I like to share from my own life is I tried to bake a cake when I was, I think, 12 years old, and made an effort. It turned out horribly. My mom came into the kitchen and said, like, oh my God, what's that? And it wasn't really, you couldn't really eat that cake. It wasn't a proper cake. And, you know, that sort of somehow triggered the belief in me or caused me to believe that I can't bake. And, you know, only decades later did I try baking again and discover that while I'm still not a master baker, I can now bake cakes that are, you know, edible. Mm-hmm. And so we often have those beliefs that, you know, we've acquired over time and then hold on to them, but they can be very limiting, and they can be very limiting in terms of personal growth, learning and development, but they can also be limiting in terms of taking our products forward. So we can become very attached to what our product does at the moment, what it looks like, what it's good at, who it serves, how we make money, that we then sometimes overlook opportunities for innovating it and for changing it. So it's, for me, part of what then leads to what Clayton Christensen referred to as an innovator's dilemma, not on an organizational enterprise level, but more on a personal level. Mm. So by developing a growth mindset and seeing ourselves as malleable and changeable, certainly our mind and our emotional and intellectual capabilities, I think we allow ourselves to tap into more into the true potential that we have as human beings.
Yeah, very good. I love how you described that. And as you're telling us about the quote, I was going back to things that we talked about earlier too, just about in the beginning, it's hard and soft skills, right? You know, the hard skills, you can pick up a tutorial and learn some of these hard skills. The soft skills, a little bit more nuanced, and we learn those more through experience. And we, if anyone, you know, everyday innovators, if you feel weak in either area, whatever that may be, this is such a great quote to remind us that growth is always present, always possible. And it's just the effort that is needed. We don't know where we're going to end up. You know, we put in some of the effort and make ourselves better.
Yes, absolutely. And product management is such a rich and such an interesting but multifaceted discipline. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it takes a long time to master it. And, you know, maybe it's never possible to be an expert in all areas of product management. And so, you know, but just kind of, as you said, putting in the effort and recognizing that, you know, we can learn and we can develop and continuing to develop, I think, you know, that allows us then at least professionally to grow. And the same is true for the soft skills and the people skills that allow us to grow as a human being, as a person.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for sharing all the other information. Your books are so helpful to give us insights, practical knowledge, tools that we can put in action. How can people find out about the work that you do and those books?
The best place is my website, romanpischler.com. So you can find out about my books there. There's a blog, videos, templates that you can download. And I recently started my own little podcast. So yeah, just check it out and see if there's anything that you find helpful.
Yeah. And since people are listening to this podcast, they're inclined to listen to others. Tell us just a little bit more about that format, what they can expect.
So my podcast I'm not even sure that it should be called a podcast. So it's not like a traditional podcast where people are being interviewed and where there's a conversation. So what I've decided to do is offer audio versions of my articles so that people have a choice if they want to listen to the articles or they want to read the articles. But for the lack of a better word, you know, I thought like, well, I'll call it a podcast because it is, well, you know, a collection of episodes, but every episode, as I said, is essentially an article that I read out.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So if people want to get insights from you, they can go to your blog and read those. If they prefer listening, which many of us do when we're working out, doing other activities, they can go to the podcast and get those insights as well.
That's right.
Great. So romanpichler.com, all the details there. Roman, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. It was really nice talking to you.
And Roman, I have an extra bonus question for you. So this has been a great discussion about how product managers, you know, moving into leadership, deal with leadership issues. One thing that tends to be universal is time management. And product managers typically are putting out fires more times than not. They don't always know what their time is like when they get to work during the day. And we all want more time, right, to focus on those things that are important in our role. Can you just share some tips, things that you have encountered that are helpful for time management?
Thanks for asking that question. It's certainly, you know, something that very much resonates with me, you know, both in terms of my own work as well as, you know, been working with other product people. So the first tip that I'd like to share is focus on your core job and your core responsibilities. Mm. So an area where I see product people helping out and often helping out on a continued basis, certainly in an agile context, is a scrum master and agile coach work. Many product people I meet don't have a scrum master agile coach who's adequately available and qualified. And then, you know, it's only sort of natural, nearly, it feels natural to say like, well, you know, I can help the development team, I can help with the development process. And if they've got any issues, then, you know, I'll try to be there and, you know, I'll try and coach. But what it does is it makes a challenging and very rich job even more demanding. And I think it essentially masks an organizational impediment and an opportunity to improve as an organization. So, you know, if that's the case for you, I'd say, and it doesn't have to be Scrum Master or Agile Coach, it could be UX design or another area related to process, people, management, and the solution, design and implementation, step back, investigate the real cause, but, you know, try and focus on your core job. And then don't neglect the less urgent but important work. Those are things typically around product discovery and product strategy work. Looking to the market, seeing what the competitors are up to, what are new trends, technology trends and consumer trends, regulatory changes. What about the product performance? What are some key, how are your key indicators tracking? So make time for that. If you don't, if you optimize too much for the urgent work, then you're likely to generate more work for you in the future. And you're likely to have to do more firefighting and crisis management. Similarly, and sort of in line with what I said earlier, you know, don't neglect in investing in connection building and relationship management and the people side of your job. You know, same thing goes here. If you neglect to address conflicts, then, you know, you'll have more work at the later stage that won't go away typically. Uh-huh. And then take proper breaks. You know, I think it's really interesting to see how professional athletes train and organize their work. They train very hard, but they also do make sure they don't overtrain and they give themselves the breaks that they need, that the body needs and the mind needs to recover to be fresh and be able to then be, you know, show a top performance. And I think we need to do the same thing. And that could be that you know, do not read emails over lunch. But maybe go for a walk or go to the gym or whatever works for you, or do some yoga, do some meditation, but listen to music, do something completely different, but just to step away for a little while, or that you sort of really limit yourself to how long you work for in the evening and learn to let go and learn to say no and put some limits in place here. So to protect yourself and protect your mental well-being, empowering others, coaching others, and then being able to delegate work. So I sometimes think product people, particularly in an agile context, think they have to be product backlog managers and user story writers and development team babysitters, but none of that is true. So while it's important to attend to the product backlog, I think, you know, it's also important to encourage the development team to take on responsibility and share. And over time, when you kind of coach and teach development team members, and, you know, if they're happy to, once they've soaked up enough knowledge about the market and the users, they can do some of the user story refinement on their own. And so that frees up some of your time. Mm-hmm. And then maybe finally something, you know, along the lines of time management and a little bit of self-discipline, avoid task switching and time box your activities. So for instance, I find it useful to time box emailing and messaging, you know, to like say 30 minutes or so in the morning and try and get that done and then close down all the applications and then focus on other work and get that done. And then say before lunch, check again, and then have one or two time boxes in the afternoon where I look at all my messages. So you're not constantly disturbed and you're not constantly distracted, you know, constantly task switching. That's ultimately better for your productivity and throughput. And it also it's meant better for your mental well-being. If you task switch too much, then certainly that's what I find. It creates a lot of restlessness and then it's harder to chill in the evening. So you then crave for that stimulation that the task switching can bring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're much less effective, but we feel like getting more done.
That's right.
It's a very bad cycle. Thank you for sharing all those. I want to just go back and highlight a couple of the, you know, focusing on your core job, your responsibilities. Product managers, we tend to be good at lots of things, right? That's mm-hmm. how we end up in this role, and we're able to, you know, pull things off because of that. So it's easy for us to step in and say, okay, no one's doing that. You know, I'll go take care of that, right? I'm pretty good at UX design. I'll jump in and help with that. You know, I can do some coding. I can actually do some messaging for marketing, whatever the task is, as opposed to identifying some weaknesses in the organization that we need to firm up and think about that we need to build this system that is sustainable. And if we don't identify that, then people are never aware that we have some areas here that do need to be shored up. And the relationship building, you know, that goes back to the trust and the rapport also, and taking time for that to do the relationship building, having lunch with people, you know, different interactions. That might feel like it's sucking up time that you could use now for maybe, you know, talking with a customer, which is also valuable, getting through that to-do list you have to do. But that pays great dividends in the future. Mm-hmm. And I had this manager once that taught me such a good lesson in that. He was well known for mentoring people that went on to other parts of the organization. So people would stay, some people stayed with him a long time, and others would stay with him, you know, for the required 18 months, I think it was, in our organization before they could switch jobs out. And he always encouraged that, right? He was helping people grow to take on new responsibilities other places. And he, as a kind of a middle level person in the organization, had more influence than many of the executives, right? Because of that, he had a very powerful network. It was just great to see. So thank you for going through those added things on managing our time well.
Well, thank you for asking the question. And again, thanks for having me.
It's been a great pleasure, Robin.
Yeah, nice talking to you again.
Thank you for again listening to The Everyday Innovator. This is where product leaders and managers make their move to product master. How do we do that? That's through practical knowledge that leads to more influence and then confidence so that you can create products that customers love. Find the written summary of the discussion with Roman and also that one-page action guide to help you put into action what Roman shared with you at theeverydayinnovator.com/289. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit theeverydayinnovator.com.